The Shaolin and the Wu-Tang could be dangerous.
Yes, my lord.
He slammed his bat down in frustration. Like, are you really hitting me for that?
Right.
Like, you want it. Like, you want me to be... You want me to do a dirty slide? I'll show you a dirty slide. That was not a dirty slide.
Well, he even said that at second base when he was taken aback when Brock Holt said something to him. Like, are you serious? You thought that was dirty? Little man, I will take you out next time. I mean, this could get ugly. You want me to do this? We can do this. It's stupid. I can't see how people think that that was a dirty slide. Really, the baseball has gotten soft because the amount of people have that I've seen, and there's been a lot that actually think that was a dirty slide. I was shocked.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 223. We're recording late night Wednesday after that game. That one will get the blood pumping, huh, Scott?
We finally got the brawl we've been asking for. It wasn't the greatest brawl in the world as far as baseball brawls, but you know what? It did the job. It did exactly what it needed to do. Tyler Austin, thank you so much for defending some... It was a ridiculous move by Kelly, because the slide in the first place was fine. There was nothing wrong with the slide. His pinky toe touched his leg. It brushed him. Maybe, I'm not even sure if it made contact with his actual leg, maybe just the jersey. And Brock Holt and his little Hansel and Gretel hair went and cried to everybody and said, you gotta hit him now. You gotta hit him now. It was stupid. So yeah, they deserved to get charged. That it was beautiful.
You angry? You a little angry?
It was annoying. I can't handle how soft this whole thing has gotten.
I think what has it been a common theme on this podcast for the last 2-3 years is the Yankees and Red Sox rivalry is soft and it needs to get heated again. And we when was the Chase Headley thing where he kind of charged the mound?
that was not a charge. That
Porcello
was,
was that last year, 2 years ago, whatever it was. That was child's play compared to tonight. You say it wasn't a good brawl. I thought it was pretty damn good. Austin showing some fire, slamming his bat down. And I've never really seen a player kind of question if I'm going to charge the mound or not. Usually if they pause, they think better of it and they say, okay, I'm not going to charge the mound. But Austin paused, looked at Joe Kelly, and then he was like, let's do this. Let's go, baby.
Yeah, F this guy and his stupid glasses. I'm coming at him. This guy thinks he's somebody. No, it was beautiful. He adjusted the dip in his lip, moved it, he just tucked it in there a little bit extra so it wouldn't go anywhere and he wouldn't swallow it, because that would be a casualty of one of these charging the mound. It's not something you want. So he did what he had to do and then went in. It was beautiful. And he got up, like, he slipped at one point, got up, and then took advantage of the situation.
He threw a haymaker.
He was throwing punches, yeah.
We'll get into everything. We'll break down the brawl. And, you know, thank God, I was thinking, thank God there was only 2 games since the last time we recorded, because in 2 games, we saw an ugly-ass blowout, and then we saw a crazy game that was like 3 games in 1 tonight on Wednesday. So yeah. Good thing all we have is 2 games to talk about.
I'm just glad we won the game that there was a fight in. That's,
yes.
Now, looking back now at these 2 games, like, good. Give us our blowout. That's fine.
Oh,
whatever.
Totally.
But we won the one that mattered at this point.
I said last night after the blowout that a 14-1 loss, I get over that in 2 seconds. I'm still pissed out off about the Baltimore extra inning losses. So you get blown out. Shit happens. You just don't play well. But if they had lost tonight, if they did not tack on runs after Tanaka coughed up a big portion of the lead, or if that shit in the ninth inning with Chapman got extra messy and they blew that game, this would have been absolutely devastating. I go back to 2004. Do you remember the Tanyan Sturts brawl?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I was at that game with my dad, and that was a game that Mariano Rivera blew in the ninth inning. It was Bill Miller who hit the walk-off against him. I vividly remember walking out of Fenway, and my dad looked at me and said, that is going to light a fire under the Red Sox. And then we all know what happened from then. So if you brawl and then you blow a lead, that can be devastating. So you are absolutely right. Thank God it worked out where the Yankees won on Wednesday night. And now they have the momentum going with Sonny Gray on the mound. and they can win this series and they can erase a lot of the crummy memories from a Baltimore series.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, tomorrow now is becoming, not to say that it's a huge game in the grand scheme of things, but as far as momentum and just now this rivalry actually does have some heat. Because when you have the players on the field that don't like each other, the fans already don't like each other. But when the players on the field don't like each other, it all comes together. It makes you hate everybody that much more. The fans really hate each other at that point because now your boys hate their guys. And it makes this thing a real thing because when there's tension on the field, you can feel it while they're playing. And that's what makes this thing beautiful.
And so when there's tension...
This was needed.
Oh, hell yeah. And when there's tension, every game of the Yankees and Red Sox matter. You want to win every single one of them. So I'm with you on that. But quickly before we get into everything, just want to remind people that the event tickets for May 26th, that's against the Angels. Everyone is overreacting to a good week by Ohtani, saying he's going to not only win the Rookie of the Year, but he's also going to be the MVP and the Cy Young. He's just going to win all the awards.
Yeah, hopefully Babe Ruth right there.
Hopefully we get an Ohtani game on that Saturday, either pitching or hitting. But that's a Saturday night game, 7 p.m. We're going to be doing the pregame at the Bronx Brewery. With your ticket, you get a t-shirt and a free beer at the brewery, plus the pregame there. I know, Scott, you're working on getting a food truck, so that's going to be a really fun event.
Yep, there will be a food truck there. The t-shirt is going to be a custom shirt for the event, and then a pint of beer, 16-ounce pint, is included in your ticket, and then we have drink specials at the brewery itself. So going to be a blast. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've already sold over 100 tickets, and we're not even a month out yet. So, again, get your group. I gave this deal last time. This is for the May 26th event. If you are the captain, the organizer of a group of 10 people or more, your ticket is on the house. Just shoot me an email, and we'll hook it up. If you get a group of 5 or more, your ticket is half price. And, again, just shoot us an email, and we'll hook it up. But yeah, we want people to get their friends together and let's do this. It's more fun when we have big groups like that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. And coming up the back half of this episode, Scott, you spoke with Donnie Collins. He covers the Rail Riders for the Scranton Times Tribune. Donnie's been on the podcast a few times, and I'm sure we'll be on the podcast later this season just for our every periodic Rail Riders update.
Yeah, it was good. We talked just basically about all the things that are happening down there, you know, a good amount about Gleyber Torres and where he's playing and where he's comfortable and kind of one of the interesting things that I was asking Donnie and we were talking about is, so you know how we had in the beginning of the year all this outfield depth? What's that looking like now?
That.
And what does Scranton look like as far as outfield? So that he gave an interesting answer as far as what he thinks the depth is currently. So nice. Yeah, good stuff.
So as I said, I'm hoping that the 14-1 drubbing woke the Yankees up. You have to, when you get your teeth kicked in like that, the only thing, you can go one of two ways. You can put your tail between your legs and you can go cry and you can roll over, or you can look yourself in the mirror and say, this shit needs to stop right now. We are a better team than the way we are playing. It doesn't matter if we have a couple guys injured. We still have plenty of firepower in this lineup. Let's wake the hell up. And it seems, at least after one game and the brawl, it might even help even more. But it seems they came out, the bats were on fire in the first inning, and that's what I loved after they got beat like they did on Tuesday.
Yeah, it was a bad loss. It was a bad loss all around. I mean, when you look at it from the beginning of the game, Severino was terrible. You know, he got into the fifth inning. It was just a bad situation. There were a couple positives in the sense that it seemed like Stanton was starting to get glimpses of his swing back in that game. I mean, you saw what he did. Aaron Judge was got the monkey off of his back with facing Sale. So there were a couple positives, but really not very many in the grand scheme. It was an ass kicking. It was a good old fashioned ass whooping on that one. But yeah, I think it did fire them up a little bit. You know, this is something that you got to look in the mirror and be like, this is not who we are. This team is not that much better than we are. And you know, they came out firing today.
And this brawl could definitely unify them.
Like
we thought the Detroit brawl last season unified the team.
Yeah, and it's happening really early, which is a good thing too. You know, these are when you have a fight like this, and your whole team is going out there, and you know you get that camaraderie, it just grows instantaneously. It's going to happen for the Red Sox too. So that's why this is going to be a battle to the end of the year. Both of these teams will look at that and they will push forward and probably thrive off of it.
Sometimes I think with brawls, obviously you defend your teammates. The Red Sox are defending Joe Kelly and Brock Holt. The Yankees are defending Tyler Austin in this instance. But there's got to be, I think, to a man, if you get the truth out of some of those Red Sox players, once they see the replay on what happened on that slide.
Brock, you're a little bitch.
Exactly. They're saying, okay, it was a clean slide. Austin slid over the bag. There's the new slide rule where you have to be over the bag and you can't slide past it. They're trying to make the game safer, blah, blah, blah. It was a clean slide. His spike was up, but I don't think Austin was trying to spike Brock Holt. I think that's just how he slid, and it happened to get Holt on the leg, and Holt took offense to it. I almost understand. You get a spike in the shin, you say a word or two, but that could have very easily been the end of it, because if any Red Sox player, if Joe Kelly or anybody went into the clubhouse and looked at the actual play, they would have said, there was no intent there. Let's just move on. But that's not what happened.
No, and I mean, Joe Kelly's a little bitch in the first place. he's just like the perfect guy that had to do this, because it's
rec spec, little bitch.
Yeah, he's I got a lot of respect for people that wear rec specs, but his are like ski goggles. I don't like those new age ones. I'm a fan of the Chris Sabo old school rec specs. Those things are some thick ass plastic. But the retaliation was dumb. It really was, and Austin should have taken offense to it, because you know what? He didn't do a damn thing wrong. Like, literally, I mean, this is what's so ridiculous is that these new rules that are in place is now creating an issue for where fans are like, oh my God, I'm seeing so many people, even Yankees fans on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram comments saying it was a dirty slide. He should have done it. Are you insane? Are we watching the same game? What are you saying? How could you possibly, how many years ago, 3 years ago, you were able to slide at the guy's legs and touch the bag with your finger, and it was fine.
Oh, yeah.
Who gives a shit?
There was, I remember from 10 years ago, just some ridiculous slides where the guy's not even in the same stratosphere as the bag, trying to take someone out.
I was
out,
taught like, that when I'm playing baseball. That's what I'm taught. Take the guy out. And it's a new rule.
They even replayed the play to see if it was an illegal slide. They would have called it double play. And the replay didn't overturn it. So that could have been the end of it right there, too.
Well, that was the reason it wasn't turned. I think they did call it the slide was because you went through the bag. They would have, if Brock Holt had made a throw to first base, they would have called it double play.
You think so? Is that what they said?
Yeah, they did, because he didn't continue the play, so therefore it doesn't matter. He made no attempt to go to first base. He had the ball in his hand, so they could have deemed that an illegal slide because he did slide over the bag as well. And I guess there was a centimeter that was outside with the leg. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Look at dirty slides. It was not a dirty slide at all. It really wasn't. When you slide, sometimes your feet pop up a little bit.
And
get over it.
You could tell Austin felt he was in the right. He slammed his bat down in frustration. Like, are you really hitting me for that?
Right.
Like, you want me to do a dirty slide? I'll show you a dirty slide. That was not a dirty slide.
Well, he even said that at second base when he was taken aback when Brock Holt said something to him. Like, are you serious? You thought that was dirty? Little man, I will take you out next time. I mean, this could get ugly. You want me to do this? We can do this. It's stupid. I really can't see how people think that was a dirty slide. Really, the baseball has gotten soft because the amount of people have that I've seen, and there's been a lot that actually think that was a dirty slide. I was shocked.
And then you could tell quickly the Red Sox all realized, oh, we're in over our heads in a brawl with the Yankees. Because first of all, you've got CeCe, who is fearless. He loves brawls. He's one of the first
he's
guys
psychopath.
Out there always.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Also, just realizing that since he's on the DL, he's probably going to get in trouble. Since, if you remember, Clint Frazier getting in trouble for coming on the field during a brawl last season. But then you got Stanton and Judge just pushing the pile around like they're doing an NFL drill, pushing one of those carts. The Red Sox had no chance in that brawl. They got pushed back into their own dugout. Like, here you go, go back into your little hole, little guys.
It was ridiculous. The amount of massive human beings on the Yankee side, and don't forget, there's Dellin Betances too, who's taller than all of them, and you know, they've just got these massive human beings moving piles, and it was beautiful. Judge had a little bitch Joe Kelly in a headlock. He literally could have ripped his head off if he wanted.
He better not get in trouble for that. He was playing peacemaker, and right. I don't think Judge. I mean, Judge is so mild mannered and so respectful. I could never see him actually throwing a punch or anything like that. So if he gets in trouble, I think I'm gonna be pretty pissed about.
I don't think he will. I mean, it's pretty obvious that he was trying to maintain or just control things because he could have done something very easily if he wanted.
He's the bouncer at the bar that's just trying to maintain all the drunk people.
Yeah, exactly. Did you see the tweet that I sent out with the video of him faking the ball throw into the stands? I love
not
that.
So nice guy anymore.
Little
huh?
little bit of a little bit of an edge there. A little bit of an FU to the Boston fans. I love it.
And then I don't know if you noticed this, but Christian Vasquez clearly has been taking pointers from Jason Varitek because he actually put his mask back on.
I did see that on the
to
second
run
time
out
I
into
it,
the
yeah.
brawl. So yep. that is just the biggest bitch move of all time. At least Varitek never took his mask off. But Vasquez had his mask off and then decided to put it back on so he couldn't get hurt in the brawl.
He made a conscious decision. He's like, oh, this is happening. Mask back on. I saw that. Yes. There was a complete thought process there.
So I was thinking before Austin got hit, I was wondering if the Red Sox were going to retaliate. And I didn't think they were because it was starting to become a close game. But then I thought that there's no guarantees that the next time the Yankees and Red Sox play that Tyler Austin is on the team. And I think that's why they decided to do it tonight.
You think that was called from the dugout, or that was a Joe Kelly, I'm doing it? Because there seems to be some bad blood right there with the managers. They were jawing at each other.
Cora, well, yeah, Phil Nevin got
well, Nevin went
from
nuts, but Boone and Cora Boone were and definitely Cora. Jawing at each other.
I don't know. I think that in a situation like that, it's everyone is involved. Maybe the manager doesn't say yes, go hit this guy, but I think that he's aware of the decisions that are happening.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be a bad manager if you're not aware of what your players, I mean, unless it's really done, you know, behind closed doors, but I'm pretty sure that Cora was aware that was going to happen, and I would hope that Boone would be aware if something like that was going to happen in his own dugout.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it was. I mean, I think it was definitely talked about and basically said if you get an opportunity, yeah, hit him. And just by seeing the way that Cora was acting afterwards, you could tell that there was like, you know, whatever, we hit you. Yeah, what? It was kind of one of those. He kept doing that like dismissive hand movements. I'm doing it if nobody can see me right now. I'm doing the dismissive hand movements to Aaron Boone. And Boone started getting live a little bit. I thought he was going to get kicked out. I thought he was going to keep going on that. But I guess he was just defending Nevin right there because I think they were surprised that he got kicked out of the game.
With Boone, Boone almost needs a slap in the face just to wake up. I feel like he's going through the motions or something. Like there just doesn't seem to be any. There didn't seem to be any life in the team and any life in the manager before tonight. So hopefully this just wakes the whole thing up.
Yeah, good. That's fine. You know what? It's still very early.
Of course
early.
It is. Of course it's very early. So, but see, that's also annoying because I realize it's very early. No one is writing the Yankees off after 11 or 12 games. No one who has ever watched an ounce of baseball would ever do that. But just because it's April doesn't mean you can't be absolutely pissed off at the way the team was playing because it was very frustrating.
No, there's nothing wrong with being upset and frustrated in the way that they play. But I'm talking about, I mean, specifically, I'm talking about Boone in the sense that he's got to figure these things out and he's got to go through the motions in order to figure them out. He can't just like flip a switch and then understand what it's like to manage for 3 months. You know what I mean? Like these are all things that we're going to see. And it circumvents the entire thing. It's like, he's got to see what happens when his team brawls. He's got to see what happens when his team goes through a losing streak. He's got to see what happens when his team gets really hot. Like all these things are brand new to him. And I think people forget that. And they're just out there criticizing him as the manager, and rightfully so. He made decisions, I thought too, that were, you know, very questionable. But at the same time, like, you know, the jury to me is out on him until I can see more stuff.
Of course it is. But one of the questionable decisions I think you're alluding to is sitting Brett Gardner against Chris Sale, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't sit the leader of your team, one of the veteran leaders of your team, the longest tenured Yankee. You know, against Chris Sale in the first series against the Red Sox, when they came out smoking hot 7-8 and 1-8 and 1, and you're not going to put your best roster out there, I don't give a shit. It, because unless you had somebody who was actually like a legitimate ball player, that's not the case. This was Shane Robinson.
Shane Robinson,
you sat him for because he's Sugar a right-handed
Shane.
Bat.
Sugar Shane.
All because he's a right-handed bat, there would be no other logical reason. Not that that was logical.
No, it was asinine. When I saw that lineup come out, I almost thought I was being trolled. Gardner was not playing, like you said. Shane Robinson, who they literally just picked up off the scrap heap, signed him to a major league contract and called him up. DFA'd Jace Peterson just to get another right-handed bat in the lineup against Chris Sale. I understand Sale is filthy against lefties, but guess what? Sale is also filthy against righties. He embarrassed Jace Peterson. Shane Robinson. Shane Robinson swung at a ball that barely went 55 feet. That's how lost he was at the plate. I'd much rather have Brett Gardner facing Chris Sale than Shane Robinson. And yeah, Gardner's numbers were bad against Sale, but you know what? So are Aaron Judge's. And Judge went out there 3-for-3 off Sale with a moonshot home run. I don't care about stats when it comes to when the decision is Brett Gardner or Shane Robinson. I don't give a crap about stats.
Right, exactly. The other thing about if you're looking at the stats, that they don't even tell the whole story on what Brett Gardner does. Brett Gardner plays great defense. Brett Gardner is a leader in the clubhouse. Brett Gardner is good on the base path. He works the count. Maybe he doesn't have a great success rate against Chris Sale, but I guarantee he would have worked the count. I guarantee he would have gotten the pitch count up a little bit more than Shane Robinson would. He would have given him a good at-bat. Would have been able to give good information to his other players on what's coming. You think Sugar Shane Robinson's giving pitch, telling the guys what pitches are coming and how it's spinning and what it looks like out of his hand? No! Brett Gardner would do that.
Do you know what Sugar Shane Robinson was saying? Crap, I have to go to the major leagues for 2 days and face Chris Sale.
It's pissing me off that he's wearing number 25. I don't know if that's pissing anybody else off. That's like a legitimate number. And it was
Mark
Giambi, Teixeira, Jim Abbott. Like that. It's the number I wore because of Jim Abbott. It's pissing me off that Shane Robinson's wearing it. I want to rip it off his back.
Mm.
Sorry.
I like it. I love it. I didn't understand. It didn't matter. They lost 14-1, but it's just a decision that I fundamentally disagree with on Boone. And he was on the Michael Kay show on Tuesday before the game. They asked him about it. He said that it's an extra rest day for Gardner because he played a lot over the weekend. Extra rest day 10 days into the season? Are you kidding me? You had Monday off. I think if you were to ask Brett Gardner, he would want to be out there. And I also think it's important to say that if you were to give Chris Sale the decision on who he would rather face Shane Robinson than he would Brett Gardner. So it's just a weird decision on Boone's part.
Yeah, I don't really understand it. But chalk it up. Chalk it up to new manager.
One. Put it on the list. Put it on the list of decisions we don't understand so far to date. Here we are, April 11th. Tanaka, both starters, honestly, Severino and Tanaka,
were terrible.
We're bad. I guess let's start with Severino because there was the whole, I don't want to call it a controversy, news that potentially he was tipping his pitches. The ESPN broadcast, Rick Sudcliffe, mentioned that he noticed Severino's hands when he's throwing a fastball were further away from his body than when he was throwing a slider. And the Red Sox were all over his slider. They hit 500 off of his slider in that start. If you look at the screenshots side by side, it's very, very subtle. I would think that the Red Sox would have to have eagle eyes to notice that when they're trying to prepare for a pitch. But hey, maybe they are using, maybe they've got some advanced technology with Apple Watches, some Bluetooth technology telling them, oh, it's going to be a slider, it's going to be a fastball.
Yeah, maybe they got those Brian Roberts special contact lenses so they can see different things better. When you look at the pictures of what they're talking about, it looks like he was when he brings his hands together in the glove with the ball at his waist and he's about to deliver the pitch, knee up, going momentum towards home plate is when they're saying his hands were away from his body a little bit more on the fastball than on the slider. So I don't know. It seems like a very, very minuscule thing. And to me, it would be very difficult for the batter to pick that up, especially where they're saying it's happening. Whether he was tipping his pitches or not, I personally don't think that was what it was. It could have been something else. Or we could go on to my train of thought in the sense that Severino just wasn't very good. He wasn't locating his pitches, and they were hitting balls that were in the strike zone because they were sitting on things because they noticed that he did not have his stuff.
Yes.
And that's what I think happened.
I agree. I think that's probably what happened. And after the game, Boone and Rothschild both downplayed the fact that he may have been tipping his pitches, but they didn't outright deny it. Boone basically said it's something that we're constantly monitoring. I think he was saying we're constantly monitoring if our pitchers are tipping pitches.
Yeah, and that's fine, and they should. They should always be conscious of what they're doing and how they're doing it. There should be a guy that's watching this type of thing. But I don't know. It doesn't. I'd have to watch the video again, like really closely. And again, it's so minute of a thing. And I understand something very small can definitely be something very big. But again, it has to happen at a time where the batter can also recognize it before the pitch comes. So I don't know. This seems to me that it was just too close to the delivery of the pitch and too small. It's just really not much of a difference really at all. And I'm staring at a screenshot.
And the rest of the bullpen that game was also terrible. Canely and Shreve came in and just the game blew wide open. Mookie Betts had like 25 home runs. Canely, I'm a little concerned with because he has not been good. He's the whole season. He's given up 5 earned runs and 6 1/3 innings pitch, 7 walks, which is really bad.
That's the one that's the concerning for me is and out of character, the walks.
Yes. And we were having a discussion, amongst ourselves and Frank today about his release speed and that all of his pitches, fastball, changeup, slider, his release speed on all of those pitches is down so far this year if you look at the previous two seasons. Now, that could be a number of different things. It could be a mechanical issue, which is, I believe, what Canely is attributing it to. Could be a little bit of a dead arm. We've seen pitchers have dead arm either after spring training because their arm just isn't conditioned yet or in the middle of the season or whatever like that. But if he is losing velocity on his pitches, that could be why A, he's walking more guys, and B, he's not getting swings and misses.
Yeah, it's he's chalking it up to a mechanical issue, and it seems like we saw the guy in person. The guy looks like he's in good shape. I don't know what the arm, if it is a dead arm in the sense that, you know, maybe he didn't get enough pitching, maybe he didn't get enough innings in spring training. That could also be a thing. A lot of times these guys have to work their way up till they're at full strength as well. So you see this more often, I think, with relief pitchers early in the season until they can get into their groove. But I don't know. I'm not concerned about it at this point because it doesn't seem like it's an injury. If it's a mechanical issue, like they say, that's something that can be fixed. And over repetition, bullpen sessions, getting it right, it seems like it's something that could be fixed. So I'm not at a point right now where I'm concerned. It's just, it's glaring that there's something going on. And if it's not an injury, then it's a mechanical issue. And I feel like that could be adjusted. But yeah, the walks, it's just, you know, I mean, when he came over, he was, I think, what was he, leading the league in walks per batter. I mean, he was leading the league on
fields. I think what it was, his K to walk ratio was one of the best in the league.
Yeah, whatever it was the dude didn't walk very many people, and
yeah, and now struck out walking a ton of people.
Yeah,
well, I think the bullpen I still think is going to be a strength of this team, but it has been a weakness of this team through 2 weeks in the season. Adam Warren has really struggled, as we just said. Tommy Canely has really struggled. Green had one bad outing. We saw Robertson with the grand slam in Toronto off against Justin Smoke. Chapman has either looked unhittable or he puts guys on base. So we have not seen consistency out of this bullpen yet. Like I said, I'm still confident, not worried yet, but the bullpen has not been what we think it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, you look at different days, though, and you see flashes of really good stuff. I mean, Robertson looked really good tonight. He looked, in the eighth inning, he pitched, he looked very good. Chad Green gave up a hit and then came back and shut them down. And then Chapman today, yes, he did have his control wasn't there, but he threw an unbelievable slider to Mookie Betts to strike him out in the ninth. That was a great pitch.
And he was not going to a fastball against Mookie.
And it was a ballsy pitch, and you could tell that, I mean, Gary Sanchez was pumped up behind the plate on that particular pitch, too. It was a great pitch.
That's a do-or-die pitch, almost.
No doubt.
Because
absolutely,
it's 3-2. If he doesn't swing, it's ball 4, and you've got bases loaded, 1 out against Devers.
Yep, Oh, it was an incredible pitch. It really was. And he executed it perfectly. So we're seeing really good things, I think, from these guys individually on separate occasions. It's just a matter of them putting it together. I think Kainley is probably the one guy that we need to see, pitch better with some consistency, because he really just hasn't found it yet. But I think everybody else has at least found it in glimpses. Even Betances has looked good occasionally. Or the last outing, he looked pretty good.
And Tanaka is, I think, also a bit of a concern. He did have two good starts to start the season. And coming into tonight, he had 15 strikeouts and no walks, which is phenomenal. But there's been a trend with Tanaka since he came into the majors. In 2014, he threw a fastball 40% of the time. Then in 2015, it went down to 33%, and then 32% the next season, 28% last year, and then so far this year, 21%. So you see the trend. It is going down. And if you look at his splitter and slider ratio, though, they're going up in the exact opposite direction. So he's replacing his fastball with splitters and sliders. And we saw that tonight. He did not throw many fastballs tonight. He was relying only on his split and his slider. He got away with it in innings 2 through 4, but inning 1 and inning 5, it was ugly. And it's glaring. When a pitcher has no fastball and won't throw it, hitters can just dig in and sit on something. And it was a problem for Tanaka tonight.
Well, there's a couple of compounding issues here when you don't throw the fastball. One, the fastball is used to set up other pitches. So when you have a splitter, sinker pitch and it's coming out of your hand, the whole point of that is it's supposed to look like a fastball and then die at the end. So the batter is swinging over top. When you're not throwing your fastball, they're just going to assume that ball, if it starts low, it's going to end low, and they're not going to swing at it, and that's what happened. Some guys were laying off of those pitches. If guys are laying off of his splitter and sinker, then he's certainly not as effective. And yes, he has been known. It seems like he's done it, over the past couple outings, definitely in the last one, he's gotten away with a couple hangers. He's not going to get away with those anymore if he's not consistently mixing in that fastball to show that, yeah, this is, occasionally it's not going to drop. So you got to look out for both of them. I think it's important. And I know this is an overwhelming theme, though, when you look at the Yankees pitching staff as well. So part of this is kind of the Rothschild effect. You do see a lot more breaking stuff with Rothschild's pitching staff. It's just one of his philosophies. But you got to show these pitches. If you can't show and prove that you're going to come out with a fastball and locate it, especially low in the zone for where Tanaka gets the most swings and misses, then they're not going to, they're not going to respect the splitter, because they're just going to let it drop off the table in that swing.
Exactly. The Red Sox did not have to even concern themselves with a fastball tonight. And that's the problem. It's not using it. I guess it's like chicken or the egg scenario. But what you were talking about with Rothschild's philosophy, Fangraphs put an article up today talking about the Yankees being a very unique pitching staff, because on the one hand, they have the hardest average velocity fastballs as a staff. They also throw fastballs the least amount in the league. So they have really good fastballs. They just don't use them. They use them sparingly.
Well, so I think part of the reason is because this league has become such a fastball-hungry, jump on a fastball league. Everybody can hit a fastball no matter who you are. And now the league is so used to these high 90 the big time velocity guys. Whereas, 5, 10 years ago, maybe not even 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I don't even know anymore, but there was, a handful of guys that could throw in the high 90s. Now every team has a handful of guys that can throw in the high 90s. So you're not seeing that uniqueness anymore. But if you have a quality breaking stuff to go off of that high 90s velocity, then you're a different guy. I mean, we see it with Betances. If Betances is locating a fastball and throwing it for strikes,
forget about it. Lights
the curveball, it's devastating. It's one of the best pitchers in baseball. So it's a very fine line with throwing it and showing that you could throw it for strikes as well, and then not throwing it, because it's got to be respected. And once it's respected, then everything is on the table and you're a totally different at-bat.
Well, I think for Tanaka, it might just be he needs to start putting a little bit of a wrinkle on his fastball, whether that's some sink or some cut. I mean, look what CeCe's doing. He throws a ton of cutters now. And it's, what is he touch, 89 miles an hour? So, but he still uses it. He still goes to it.
I mean, Tanaka has enough velocity where he could still throw a fastball by you. It's not like he's, you know, hitting the high 80s, low 90s. I don't think he's there.
Well, where is it? We haven't seen it. It's kind of, to me, like he's afraid of his four-seam fastball.
Well, unless you're saying he's hiding the fastball, he doesn't have the velocity on the fastball. I'm not seeing that.
I mean, I don't know if it doesn't have the velocity. He doesn't have the confidence in it. He doesn't have the confidence
It's obviously doesn't have the confidence, yeah. And that is a problem. When you don't have the confidence in a pitch like that in your fastball, then yes, that's a problem. 100%.
It's the exact same thing with Betances. When he loses confidence in his fastball, hitters sit on the curveball. It doesn't matter how good your curveball is. A curveball is not an unhittable pitch if the batter knows it's coming. Right. A fastball can be an unhittable pitch even if the batter knows it's coming.
No, it's one of those pitches that has to set up the other stuff, especially with Tanaka, because when Tanaka is good, he's low in the zone. And if you're only throwing sinkers and splitters low in the zone, then you're not going to fool anybody. You're just not going to fool anybody. And they're going to lay off that pitch more times than not, because they're going to expect that you're not throwing the fastball because you're not showing it. You got to show it. It's just like Severino too. Severino's got to occasionally show that he throws that changeup. He doesn't have to throw it a lot. He just has to put it in the back of their minds that changeup might come. And if that's the case and he does that effectively and he wins that mental battle, then he's the leg up on the at-bat. And it's the same thing with Tanaka on the fastball.
Sonny Gray is going to get the start on Thursday. You're predicting 20 wins for him, so he's going to have to start racking up those wins pretty soon. Let's hope the first one comes on Thursday night. One of the biggest starts of a non-playoff Yankees career for Sonny Gray on Thursday.
Yeah, didn't he get the win on Saturday? And I think he did. The game we were at. I mean, I know we don't know 95% of things that happened in the game. But.
He did get the. So
19 to go.
19 more to go.
it's like the wins against the Devil Rays. It's gonna be a race. Who can win more games? The Yankees against the Devil Rays or Sonny Gray?
Just the Devil Rays in general.
or the Devil Rays in general. Or how many people go to their games? Did you see that? The 6, picture 000. Of Chicago.
Yeah, 6,000.
Unbelievable.
I think that's still being generous at 6,000.
Yeah, I thought it was actually way under that, but yeah, it was not a lot of people.
I think we caused a little bit of controversy last time when we were talking about Sonny Gray pitching on 4 days, short days, normal rest versus short days rest. So Sonny Gray, just quickly, let's just get this out of the way. Sonny Gray will be pitching on Thursday on 4 days rest. That is a lot of times considered normal in a 5-man rotation. However, considering there's usually an off day every single week, a 5-man rotation also pitches quite often on the 6th day. In fact, most Yankee pitchers pitched on the 6th day last season than they did on the 5th day. So whatever it is, if you want to call it short rest, if you want to call it normal rest, the fact of the matter is Sonny Gray's pitching on Thursday and he has enough rest.
I think the whole conversation when you're talking about 5-man rotations and the amount of rest, you could go on the internet and look at this and go down a really dark, deep rabbit hole. I suggest that you don't, because it's really not fun. It's not that interesting. But at the same time, I think it's when you talk about it, if you don't use the right terms, because I think we confuse people. And I think I was when you and I were talking about it, we were both thinking about different things. Anyway, he would be moving up a rotation spot. That is a fact, because CC is not going to be pitching. So Sonny Gray is moving up and pitching in his spot. It so happens that it's on a normal day rest according to the standard 5-man rotation. Head in circles, that's it. But yeah, he's going to be on normal rest, so I'm not going to crucify Boone.
Just picturing the Family Guy clip. Who the hell cares?
Yeah.
Let's move on. Yankees are going to go to Detroit, where they will throw either Sessa or Herman or a bullpen game against the trashy Detroit Tigers and Mike Fiers. So the Yankees should beat up on Detroit. Detroit is not a team that is expected to compete this season. Yes, they still have Miguel Cabrera, but he's old. Their rotation is filled with Fulmer and then Matthew Boyd, Francisco Liriano, Jordan Zimmermann, who's been terrible.
Did you see what happened to him today, though? He's not going to pitch against the Yankees, most likely. He got hit in the face with a line drive. He walked off, but goddamn, he got hit right in the face with a line drive. It looked bad.
I clearly did not see that, because yeah. I would have mentioned it.
It looked pretty bad, but he actually walked off. So hopefully he's okay. But it was not a good look.
Yeah, but just like the Yankees, we hope will beat up on the Rays all season, and like they should have beaten up on the Orioles over the weekend, this is a team the Yankees need to go into Detroit and beat up on.
100%. And now we don't need to fight them either, so that's good. We got the fight out of the way with the Red Sox, which was even better, so we don't need to fight the Tigers anymore. And it seemed like every other day in spring training, the Yankees and Tigers were playing, so I think maybe the animosity now is gone. They've buried the hatchet at this point.
If you're Boone, you're definitely starting Roman in one of those games, right?
100%, you have to. You absolutely have to. And, you know, look, if something were to happen, it would be unfortunate, I think, because then we're going to be losing guys for no reason at this point. Because now we don't need a brawl to motivate the team and to, you know, get these guys going. We already got that. And we would probably just lose guys to suspension for no good reason.
Right. All right. Well, like we said, Donnie Collins is coming up. You had a conversation with him, so stay tuned for that. And any last words before we get out of here?
No, hopefully they can build on it. That's what we needed to see, right? We're going to look exactly back at this, and we're going to say, hey, this was a moment, though early in the season, a pivotal moment that the Yankees collectively came together. Boone was anointed. We got him. He's now the manager. He's seen some things. Let's do this. Let's start freaking winning some games here.
And coming up for the Monday show, remember to submit your mailbag questions and also call the voicemail line. I have a feeling the voicemail line might be popping after that brawl tonight, so call it up. Let us know what you think. 646-480-0342. We'll catch you guys in a few days.
I'm sitting in the crib dreaming about Learjets and coops, the way salt shoots and how to sell records like Snoop. I'm interrupted by a doorbell, 352. Who the hell is this? I get some quick.
All right, I want to welcome on our guest, Mr. Donnie Collins, who is a writer for the Scranton Times Tribune. You can find Donnie on Twitter at DonnieCollinsTT. Hey, Donnie, how you doing?
How are you?
Doing well. We're getting this baseball thing, the season into swing. I know you guys are, what, 5-6 games into the season. So how's things down in Scranton with the Rail Riders so far?
Yeah, it's been cold, and it's tough to judge really so far how things have been going. But the team's off to a really, really great start. I mean, they your opening night looks like it's going right to the crapper. I mean, they're down 4-1, 5-1, and it was 5-1 in the ninth inning, and out of nowhere, Abby Avellino, it's a 3-run home run to win the game, and nobody sees it coming, and they've kind of taken off from there. The pitching's been okay, but they've had clutch hits. I mean, they've gotten out to leads and held them, or they've been able to come back, and this has been all things considered with this team, I think you can't argue with the start. I mean, they've had so many injuries even before the season started. You know, New York affects everything that happens here, and every injury that happened up there really hurt this roster a little bit. But they've gotten off to the kind of start you would hope they would, regardless.
Yeah, it's funny because if you're a Rail Riders fan and you see what's happening in spring training, you're towards the end, you're like, oh, you get very excited when you start seeing some of these guys optioned down because you get to watch them for a little bit longer. Gleyber Torres being one of those guys who didn't make the Yankees final roster out of camp, went down to Scranton. Some would say it's service time. Some would say it was maybe a slow spring training, maybe all of the above, but, Torres has been playing well. It looks like he's been hitting well and focusing on a couple different positions. Can you talk to us, first about the positions? I think that's one of the glaring things that is extremely interesting because of, it's adding flexibility to his defense.
Yeah, I mean, he was starting the season. He was going to play a lot of short and some second, and that's changed, obviously, with what's gone on in New York. He's going to play third and second now, and, you know, I think the big question with him really moving forward is how much longer could they let him hit here? Hey, he had an opening night. He was awful. It was one of the, you know, he was expanding the strike zone. He was just swinging wildly. He was 0-for-4, struck out a bunch, and last year he got off to a slow start here and adjusted and he adjusted like almost immediately here. He started taking the ball the other way, which is really when you see a guy at this level trying to get out of a little funk, he starts going the other way. Well, Torres did it after an 0-for-4. Now that's kind of enabled him to, you know, drive the ball up the middle a little bit more. He's pulled a home run, you know, early in the season, only played, you know, four. I think he's played in all five games, but yeah, he's hitting 348. He's he's been one of the, he's been arguably the best hitter on the team outside of, you know, maybe a guy like Higashioka or McBroom, or they both got off to big starts, but clearly Glaber is the guy you want to get off to a big start because you might need him. And he's, you know, take his 0-for-4 on opening night away. I think I saw that he's 8 for 19 or 8 for 20 or something like that. So he's clearly locked in. The weather's not affecting him. He's playing good defensively. He made a silly error, but it's only been one silly error. And, you know, he's been as advertised so far. And I think the big question is you go advance toward May, and if the Yankees, you know, really need a kickstart, which they have as of late, do you look at bringing up Gleyber Torres when he's, you know, when the service time thing is no longer an issue? And I think they will. The problem I would have with that is where do you stick him? Because, you know, you'd almost have to play him at third, but his bat really is a value more right now at shortstop.
Yeah, he's an interesting player because of that flexibility, and third base, like you mentioned, could be a spot that is open. But yeah, you have to look for the spots that are available, I think, right now. Second base is a potential. Third base with Drury, we don't know how long these migraines or, you know, head issues are going to last. And Andujar hasn't really hit up in the bigs yet. Made a pretty bad error last night. So I think they're still waiting on an opportunity for Torres. My feeling is, and let me know if you think the same, if the Yankees organization is going to bring Gleyber Torres up, they want him to play in one spot and stay in a spot, I would think, rather than pushing him around to just fill holes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's not a utility guy. They're not looking at him. They want him to have the versatility, but I think ultimately, long-term with him, they want him at one position. And third is the interesting one to me because that's the immediate need. And he, you know, there's no reason. He's got the arm for it. He's got the range. He could do it. But is he ever going to hit like a third baseman? And I think you look long term with him. Is he your shortstop of the future? Or is he your second baseman? And I think he settles more into second base. But right now, I don't think beggars could be choosers. If you're not getting any production out of third, and Drury, I mean, he was going to be a good player. I really think that. But there's a lot of question marks with him right now. And could you lose a spot to a guy like Torres? Absolutely. He could lose that position, you know, especially the longer he's out. And you know, you don't want to waste any bullets in AAA. Torres, the way he's hitting the ball, these are serious. This is line drives. He's driving the pitches that he should drive to the gaps. The home run he hit was on a pitch that just hung out over the plate. He destroyed it. He's getting ready, but, you know, big league wise as a hitter. I think he's actually a little ahead offensively than he is defensively. But the way this guy competes, the talent level he has, I think that he's going to give the Yankees very soon a serious consideration here. Whether there's some room for him to stick at third base for the foreseeable future on this team.
Sticking with some position players, we have Aaron Hicks, who's been down there. He had a rehab game. He was eligible to come off on Tuesday night. Looks like he may come back on Friday after a couple of games with Scranton. Anything with Hicks as far as it looks like you went 1-for-3, but moving well? I mean, is there anything you're seeing him just trying to get some work in so he can get back on the roster?
Yeah, always hard to tell on the first game because you see really great players look. I mean, you saw Greg Bird a couple of years ago, last year, look really good early, and then nothing after that, after those first couple of games when he started playing. And then you see guys I saw Maglio Ordonez strike out 3 times here once in his first game, and then the next night he hit 3 doubles. So it's tough to tell. Okay, what a couple of days here, and then he's going to go up. He's going to be the first guy the Yankees get back to help out there. And I love Hicks. I think I've always have, even back to his days in Minnesota. I just think he's a really good athlete who brings a little bit of energy. And he brings something else that the Yankees really need right now, and that's a center fielder who could hit a little bit. I mean, no offense to Gardner, but you want him in left where he's really outstanding defensively, and you want to get Stanton back in the DH role. So I think adding Hicks will be big for the Yankees, and that's going to happen soon unless something crazy happens tonight, but I don't expect it will.
So we've been waiting for the return to baseball for Clint Frazier for quite some time, ever since he hit his head against the wall in spring training. We really haven't seen him in what, 6+ weeks. It just seems like the concussion injury and symptoms have lingered on and on. He did a sim game. The assumption is that he's going to be sent to Scranton, to AAA. Are you hearing anything locally down there on when to expect him and kind of what his status is at this point?
With the concussions, it's always difficult to gauge. I mean, I've heard that he hasn't been cleared yet, but he's been doing some kind of drill work in the outfield. They've been getting him under the lights. It's different in every sport. And I think the thing you hear, I cover football a lot. When they get the concussion, the real important thing is to just not do anything and just kind of not push it and sit around and do what you can do that's not going to affect you, and then get back out there when the headaches are gone, the double vision's gone, and it's been gone for a while. And the good thing for Frazier here is I think the Yankees felt they could afford to take it really slow with him. But that's the thing for the Rail Riders and for Frazier that's a little frustrating, is that they've taken it really slow. And he's going to get back out there when they clear him, but he didn't go through spring training. He's going to be in Tampa for 2-3 weeks trying to get the swing back, and I wouldn't expect him back with the Rail Riders at third, fourth week in May. I mean, that's just, I haven't heard anything official on that, but everything you're kind of told, everything you're kind of hear and read, and you put it all together, and it's going to be a while yet for him, and you wonder how that affects him, because Frazier, he's a guy that loves being in the lineup, loves being out there, and he needs his reps, so he's probably itching to get out.
This kid has been just one storyline after another, it seems like, since he's been back, whether it's warranted or not. But he's the tumultuous start with the Yankees just is crazy to me when you look at how short of a time he's been around, but how many things have happened with him. And even right now with the Yankees so beaten up and battered in their on their roster, I mean, this was a golden opportunity for him, if you were healthy, to be in the Bronx and contributing pretty much on an everyday level at this point. So, I don't know if that's something that he's going to have to, just mentally adjust to and make sure he doesn't rush back, because, like you said, those concussion injuries, you just don't know what can come. And, if the symptoms have been gone for a while, you just hope that they don't return.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a challenge, because I've seen guys who've been, play here injured, but they're going well, and they feel like they're that one injury away from getting called up, and then they get called up, and then all of a sudden you see they're on the big league DL. So you don't want to end up doing that. And I'm sure the Yankees don't want that to happen, but I'm also sure Frazier looks around and sees, oh, Ellsbury got hurt, Hicks is out, and they're calling up Shane Robinson and Jace Peterson. And mm-hmm. certainly if a healthy Clint Frazier would be on the big league roster right now. So I'm sure he's got to kind of have people around him who are preaching the patients and telling them to telling him kind of to monitor this the way he needs to monitor it. And concussions aren't anything to fool around with, but there are days you feel good enough to get out there. So it's got to be difficult for him, especially someone like him who kind of is impetuous and kind of tries to kind of does some things aggressively. And you don't want him to do this aggressively. It's going to be it's up to the trainers, the coaches down there to kind of keep him in line.
So obviously the outfield starting the season was one of the very strong, deepest parts of this Yankees roster, even going down into AAA. And now, because it's even with Billy McKinney, like you said, you don't want to see someone go on the DL right when they get called up. And unfortunately that's what happened with Billy McKinney. I know we were very excited to see him just because it seems like he had turned that corner. He's fully healthy and he was ready to go. Who else is there in AAA right now that you could see that's not of the guys that have been called up that might be able to contribute in the outfield if this depth stays thin? Because you don't know how Aaron Hicks is going to come back. He has a history of injury. Hopefully he does come back and doesn't re-aggravate anything. Ellsbury is not really ready anytime soon. The Yankees might have to dip back down into Scranton for another outfielder.
I mean, do you want the honest answer? The answer is nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, Zach Zaner's off to a good start. You want Zach Zaner? I mean, that's what you're looking at. I mean, he's a good player, but he's really the true outfielder on this roster now. I mean, Rashad Crawford isn't much of a hitter. He's going to play a little bit now. The guy they have out there know, Cody Ashe could be, he's probably the guy they would call up. He's played some outfield, but he's more, you know, he's more of a DH third baseman kind of player. He's not going to hit very much in the big leagues, never has. Billy Fleming could play a little bit of outfield. The guy there that's looked really good offensively, who has, you know, kind of, you know, he's a toss up defensively, is Ryan McBroom. But you know, he's more of a first baseman. They've been trying him in right field. And I loved Bobby Mitchell had a great quote on McBroom playing the outfield. He'd played first base in Trenton last year with Mitchell, and then went to the played winter ball and tried some in the outfield, played 20 games or so, and Mitchell said, well, he was okay out there. He was surprisingly good. And I'm not sure that was a total compliment or not, but he's been okay. Do you want him out in right field in Yankee Stadium? I don't know. So I think right now, and I said this to one of my colleagues yesterday, I said, Hicks better stay healthy, because there's really, I don't know where they go if Hicks has to go back on the DL, or if God forbid Judge got hurt or something like that. I don't know where they turn. I would, what I would do if I'm Aaron Boone or Brian Cashman is just throw Tyler Wade out there. I think he could do it, but you know, and then that opens up your spot for Glaber, but they don't want to do that right now because it's too early. So they cannot afford another outfield injury, because really, you know, you're looking at the 40 man, you're looking at Floreal and guys like it, guys that you don't want to bring up. And yeah, and on the AAA roster right now, you're looking at Zach Zehner and Ryan McBroom. And that's not me being, you know, pessimistic about it from a Yankee standpoint. That's just the facts.
You just never, it's funny, because when you look at the depth chart, I didn't think those names would ever be brought up, especially this early in this season. I mean, I know what happened last year, and there were a number of outfielders that had come up and got their major league debuts with the Yankees because of injuries. But when you're going back down to the McBrooms and the Zehners, that's going down there as far as the depth. Let's switch to pitching. Champs Adams, his first start got roughed up. I know a lot of people watching the Yankees are anxious to see him get a call up at some point. I've heard so many different things about him, whether the Yankees long-term see him as a starter or a reliever. What did you see there with Champs Adams? Is he progressing like they want him to?
He's, to me, one of the most interesting cases I've ever covered. And I've been covering this franchise off and on as a beat writer, a columnist, whatever, since 2000. Adams is straight up one of the craziest cases I've ever seen, because you look at his Baseball America scouting report, and it says 93-95 or whatever it said last year, and you have scouts saying he was 93-95, and then you're sitting there in the ballpark watching Chance Adams pitch, and he's 91, and you're wondering where is all this coming from. You see people on Twitter saying, oh, you should call up Adams, look at his numbers, or you know, he's big league ready, and I'm not so sure that was fair to the guy, because boy, he had some velocity issues down the stretch last year. His changeup, quite frankly, I don't think is something he really wants to throw in a game right now. His curveball looks okay sometimes, and other times it looks high schoolish. His slider, I like his slider. I think his slider is going to be a good big league pitch, but he's got to get one of those other two breaking balls. He's got to get the curveball down to a point where he could use it, but really the Yankees want is that changeup to develop, because you know the slider when it's right is a hard breaking slider, so that they want him to be a starter. They think they could mix that curveball in. They think he could be a four pitch guy, but his scouting report has not matched what I've seen here on the mound from him. But that said, you know, that's just the scouting report. Is that Adams' fault? I mean, he was also going through reportedly, which, you know, this is from Tommy Phelps, the pitching coach here. He was going through some bone spur issues with his elbow that he had to get fixed. Chance didn't want to talk about that. He's that kind of competitor. I think you look at the one thing I love about Adams is competitiveness. He goes out there and he's going to fight you every step of the way. But his stuff at times has not been what it's been advertised to be. And I was kind of surprised, because we reported on it last year. I was kind of surprised that so many people were in awe about how down the stuff was in the spring, because it really wasn't down from what we saw last year. So Adams, I think, has a lot to prove. But the Yankees have a decision. Do you want to just go fastball slider and put him in the bullpen, or do you want to try to develop those other pitches and make him a starter? To me, I see him more as a starter, but he just needs more time. So it's a matter of, is he going to get the patience he needs and deserves to kind of develop into the starting pitcher they think he could be?
And I think when you look at the depth and you look at the system for the Yankees, you know, starting pitching is the clear area where they need more guys, and they need guys in AAA who can step up and make spot starts if they need to. We've seen Luis Sessa time and time again, and while I think he has good stuff, he just doesn't seem like he's put it together for an extended period of time, or even second and third time through a rotation, it seems like is when he starts running into problems. But Chance Adams, the one thing you're saying, he's trying to develop this this changeup, and we actually did have him on the show last year, so we know how focused he is and doesn't really like to admit to anything as far as things that are not working well. He's definitely a competitor. It doesn't seem like much bothers him. But his location, that's one of the whispers I've been hearing, is the location. The Yankees are really not happy with the amount of strikes that he's throwing.
Yeah, he works behind the count a lot. We saw that last year too. And, you know, his command is 50-50 at best. I mean, there was the first time we saw him start here last year was in May. It was at the end of May. And I forget who they played, but it was one of those early morning games. It was a 10:30.
Right, I remember that game, yeah.
For the kids. And nobody in the world was going to hit Adams that day. He was 93 to 96. I mean, everything was moving around. His fastball had great life. His slider was unhittable. We heard about this changeup that he isn't throwing very well. But he threw a couple of good ones that day. His curveball was great. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, you're going to see this guy in the big leagues in a month. And it just he never saw that pitcher again. So it's different. And part of the reason for that is because of the command of the fastball. He just doesn't throw it all the time where you want to throw it. And he gave up a home run in the first start. I mean, his first start, I mean, it was seven hits, five runs, and 3 2/3 innings. He started on opening night. And you look at it, and the numbers are bad, but really they only hit two balls hard. And one of them didn't really result in any runs. One of them was a home run, and it was a slider that he hung. And he basically said after the game, you know, I really should have spiked it, but I wanted to throw it for a strike. So it really wasn't a location issue. It was just a bad idea.
Were you surprised when the Yankees optioned Justice Sheffield to Double A and didn't start out in Scranton? Because that was when I saw that he was going to Double A. I'm not saying it was a big shock, but I was a little surprised. I thought they were going to start him in Scranton.
Yeah, I want to say I thought it was better than the coin flip he'd start here, because usually you see how many starts they get the season before at a certain level, and I thought he had started enough there that they might give him a shot here. But clearly he has some control issues to work on as well. Sometimes it benefits you to not jump that young pitcher up a level when you think that, you know, you give him something to think about. I really believe that the Yankees, you know, the same thing with Adams, but you know, work on that command, go back down there and show us you could do it again. And I think that's sometimes challenges a pitcher to get that. It's not a demotion, but it's not a promotion kind of thing. And yeah, you know, I think they want to see better out of Sheffield than, you know, command wise than they saw at the end of last year, and certainly better than what they saw in the beginning of in that first start, even though, you know, the weather probably becomes a factor in that.
You know, he's an interesting guy. I do think the Yankees are treating him a certain way. It seems like he also has a very good relationship with CC Sabathia. I know when they were in Tampa, they would hang out, and I think that's a perfect guy to be a mentor type person. Lefty, you know, obviously with as much success as Sabathia has, and really has had two different careers as far as a, you know, an overpowering guy, and then one that's had to reinvent himself as a guy who can nip the corner. So I think that's a really, really good person for Justice to get to know, because You know, obviously that can extend himself into a major league career, I think, a lot easier.
Yeah, CC is a guy that a lot of young pitchers would be well served to get to know. I mean, same thing with Chance. He probably it's a deal where CC is a totally, you mentioned, a totally different pitcher than he was now. But now he's more of a pitcher. Mm-hmm. Now he's got to have that changeup work, and he's got to be able to hit corners, and you know, and that's going to be, Sheffield's not going to throw 93, 94 forever. The body style is not there. It's not a, you know, that's what you're throwing now. But when you're 30 and you still want to have a career, you better learn how to pitch a little bit and be a professional about it. And I think that's kind of where CC could be a great example for every young pitcher, not just Sheffield, but it works for Sheffield because kind of the same arsenal. I mean, you know, the fastball, you want change ups, you know, it's something that he's got to work on getting down, slider. It's, you know, things like that that CC has kind of used to build his career and then reinvent his career are the kind of things he's probably going to have to rely on too, because most left-handed pitchers, especially, you know, smaller guys like Sheffield, you know, you wonder, could he maintain that velocity over a really long stretch in a big league career? They're going to have to reinvent themselves at some point. And CC is a great example of someone who was able to do that and have a lot of success with it.
So before we get out of here, Donnie, I want to talk about, you guys have a new skipper. Al Padrique moved on, got a major league job as a coach. And now Bobby Mitchell got promoted up from managing Trenton. So what's the clubhouse like? I mean, what are the differences you're seeing between Mitchell and then the old regime with Padrique?
Yeah, I don't know if there's much of a difference, honestly. I mean, Al was kind of a, you know, they say player manager and you know whatever, and I think Mitchell is kind of seen as a player's manager. They're both really aggressive. I think they're both kind of managing style wise on the field. More National League guys. I mean, they like to move the runners a lot. They'll sacrifice if they have to, and you know, they'll do things like that. They want to be aggressive out there. But in the clubhouse, I've seen a lot of similarities. I mean, Al, a lot of the players called Al a player's manager. I mean, yeah. Dave Miley was probably, you know, more than anything, kind of a, you know, he'll step on your throat when he needs to step on your throat kind of guy. But he stayed in the background. Al was, you know, an everyday kind of, you know, presence where, you know, the players really got behind him and enjoyed being a, you know, he made it more fun for the players. I think Mitchell's kind of, I mean, just in the early going, he seems like that kind of guy. A lot of these guys knew him from Trenton. It's a familiar face for them. But I mean, in the last, you know, since I started covering this franchise, you rarely see a total overhaul of the coaching staff. It's incredible what's happened. You know, where you have a new manager, new hitting coach, different defensive coach Travis Chapman in. It's a whole new look to this coaching staff, but it's still the same feeling in the clubhouse. They're loose guys. They know, you know, they're competitive on their own. They want to win the games. It's not just about development. It's about winning for a lot of these guys. And Mitchell has to kind of walk that tightrope with them and make sure that they're doing what they need to do to help themselves also. And he did a good job with that last year, and I expect he'll continue to do a good job with it this year. But I think it always comes down to the attitude of the players. How bad do you want it? How bad do you want it for yourself and for your team? And that's when you see guys who are developing while they work toward an international league championship. And these guys have the basis for that so far. And Mitchell's going to be a big part of that.
When Padrique obviously is now with Oakland as a first base coach, do you think one of the reasons or that led to him leaving was that the Yankees really didn't give him much consideration for manager? And were you surprised that they didn't?
I'm not surprised they didn't. They very, very infrequently do you bring up your third, your AAA manager to manage the big league club. I mean, that hardly ever happens. And it only ever happens with teams that really aren't competitive. I mean, Braves did it a couple of years ago with Snitker, but I'm struggling to think of any more recent ones than that. But I'm surprised they didn't It's surprised that's a strong word, but I think he left because he didn't get a shot to be on the staff.
Right.
They wanted a different kind of coaching staff this year. Some outside looks, and I can't complain about any of the guys they brought up. I mean, I knew Phil Nevin when he managed in Toledo. Reggie Willits is a good guy. I mean, those are the positions where you would want a guy like Al Patrique, and Al is he's managed a lot of these guys in the past, but does he have the same philosophy that Boone has, that these guys who Boone knows and trust have? I don't know that that's the case. I don't know if he's the metrics guy that these other guys are. So I don't know if it was a fit there. But interestingly enough, I mean, we always talked about, is Al enough of a metrics guy to go to a coaching staff that's kind of going to lean on some of that?
Sure.
And he ends up in Oakland.
Right.
So, I mean, so you wonder what the, you wonder what it really was. But I think sometimes it's just comfort, the fit. It's always the fit. Does this guy know the new manager well enough to be on the staff? There's got to be a trust. There's got to be a comfort level. And I'm not sure Al Patrique had that with Aaron Boone or the guys in the and the big league coaching staff. I mean, he coached with some of them, Marcus Timms and PJ Pillitteri, but not all. What ended up happening with him was he got the first big league offer he got, he took, and he should have. So that's the goal for him too, to get to the big leagues, and he did it, and he's a terrific manager, and he's going to be a really great coach. But I mean, to sit here and say I'm shocked that he didn't get a look with the Yankees, I'm not. I mean, because that just doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he goes to Oakland, like you were talking about the Billy Bean and the metrics, if he wasn't that type of guy. But, he's seeing some familiar faces over there with he's got Mateo, Caprillion, Fowler. He's got some Yankees over in there. And I thought that was one of the big reasons why that, he would get a serious look for the coaching staff because of his familiarity with a lot of the guys that are currently on the major league roster. But at the same time, you also, I think, get that with Marcus Timms as well, who's worked with, predominantly the majority of the guys who have come up through the system as a hitting coach. So there is that familiarity now on the major league level. But Patrique is definitely a good one.
Yeah, he was. And don't forget PJ Pillitteri too. He was the hitting coach here that succeeded Marcus Timms. And
right.
he's been with these guys for a couple of years now. A lot of the younger guys, he worked with Judge a lot. These are guys who really like him. And sometimes, I mean, you do this not for the manager, but for the players. And you look at a guy like Judge. I mean, I remember years ago, Gary Denbo got a job as a hitting coach because he worked well with Jeter. I mean, that was a Jeter push to get Denbo onto the big league staff, and he got him there. So I'm not saying that's what happened here, but I think sometimes you look at it and say who are the guys that have really helped our players most along the way. And sometimes I think it's a good lesson too. These guys, a lot of these guys came up through the system, but not necessarily in coaching roles on teams or, Willits was an instructor. These guys are guys who know these players pretty well. They just were behind the scenes guys in Tampa that weren't, getting their names announced before minor league games every night.
Donnie, really appreciate you coming on and giving us the whole landscape of what's going on in Scranton and in the minor leagues. And we'll definitely be talking with you throughout the season. If you're trying to find Donnie on Twitter, you can find him at Donnie Collins TT. Again, Donnie, thanks again. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.